Before we get stuck into this episode, I wanted to let you know we have an exciting opportunity to share with you halfway through. So stay tuned to find out more. In this episode of the Australian Property Show, we're joined by James Bowe of Own Home, an Aussie startup who are on a mission to remove the biggest barrier facing first home buyers today, their ability to save a home deposit. It was after spending a decade working in management consulting in the US and the UK for Bain & Co that James uncovered a unique solution to housing access and affordability. Throughout the episode, we cover that very solution and the key challenges facing first home buyers in Australia today. We also look at the massive 8-year advantage baby boomers had over first home buyers today, the impact Australia's highest population growth in 80 years is expected to have on housing affordability, why James expects home ownership may become out of reach for many Australians within 2 decades without solutions like Own Home, why rent-to-own housing schemes aren't working in Australia despite their success in the US, and of course, the bold vision James and his co-founder have for beating the Commonwealth Bank. Thanks for tuning in, and please enjoy part one of this 2-part interview with James Bowe. James, thanks for joining us on the show.
Great to be here, Tom. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Before we dive into your property story, I'd love to hear about where you grew up and what some of your favourite childhood memories are.
So I grew up on the Central Coast, so about an hour and a half north of Sydney, one of 5 children. So my happiest memories growing up would have to be all around the family home. I was lucky enough to grow up on 5 acres in Lisarow, so spent virtually my entire childhood building tree houses with friends or rafts to travel down the creek that ran through the backyard. I remember reading the Tomorrow When the War Began series by John Marsden. And off the back of that, I feel like my entire childhood was sucked into prepping for some sort of invasion by of Australia. And so spent a lot of time in the bush building tree houses with friends, growing vegetables in the vegetable garden and you know, setting up a stall at the end of the driveway and selling that to people passing by. But yeah, so a truly wonderful, idyllic place to grow up on the Central Coast. Yeah.
That sounds beautiful, and certainly I remember that series really well. It was pretty vivid stuff, wasn't it?
Indeed.
The figures in your life growing up, who were some of the most influential figures in your childhood, and what influence did they have on the path you've taken with your career today?
So certainly my parents. They were incredibly focused on education. My dad is an English teacher. My mom ran her own education business. And so for me, some of my earliest memories are helping her prepare mail outs to schools with marketing materials. She would actually draw little icons on the top of, you know, letters of where the stamps needed to go, which of course was a much slower way for her to actually ship the mail out. But for me, and I guess for her, it was just like a really generous way to get me involved before I could even read or write in what it meant to, you know, build a business. And so the trials and tribulations of building a business amidst all the vicissitudes of life was a really sort of vivid part of growing up. And I have a lot of gratitude for being so deeply exposed to that. It also probably, frankly, for a long time, probably both instilled in me the joy and possibilities of entrepreneurialism, but also certainly made me acutely aware of the uncertainty that can come with building a business. And so I'd say for the, you know, earlier part of my career pre-building Own Home, certainly I'd say informed like a reduced risk tolerance for the earlier part of my career. But I'm glad to have found that spark and energy to sort of dive headlong into tackling hard and ambitious problems. But certainly thanks to their dedication and focus on education, I was fortunate to, like, I grew up on the Central Coast, but traveled down to Sydney for school. So got the train down each day and was fortunate to have off the back of that, like, wonderful opportunities that have led me to be able to travel the world and live overseas and, you know, get full scholarships to live at university. and things like that. And so certainly my parents have been some of the most formative people in my life. And naturally, as a result of their focus on education, I'd also then say sort of the early educators in my life, whether that was, you know, like a kindergarten teacher or an economics teacher at high school. And so have an immense amount of gratitude for that sort of lifelong learning that's sort of been instilled in me.
That's fantastic. And tell me, I guess, with your mum and dad, how much of, I guess, encouragement did you get from them about really pursuing whatever you wanted in life?
I'd say like an immense amount of confidence so certainly felt that, you know, anything was possible. And so that's certainly been something that they've instilled in me. One of my, you know, greatest teachers would also have to be my older brother, who since birth was born with sort of intellectual disability. And so for me has been a great teacher on the fact that there's a lot of luck that comes in life, but also I think has been a great teacher on seizing the opportunities that have sort of, in some ways, you know, randomly but uniquely been gifted to me, and certainly made me want to, you know, make the most of all of the wonderful opportunities that I have had. Yeah,
it's provided you with an incredible outlook and perspective on life, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I think that's a good term for it. Yeah.
And mate, turning the clock back a few years to pre-pandemic times, you spent a decade or so working in management consulting in the US at Bain & Co, and I think a little bit of time in the UK as well. Can you share what that was like and how that shaped your decision to start Own Home?
Yeah. So I guess in a nutshell, it was incredibly eye-opening and rewarding. It's a very vague and nebulous term, management consulting. So to be maybe helpfully more specific, what I spent most of my time doing was working on teams or leading teams on behalf of the world's largest investors to help them think through different opportunities, or working with technology businesses in San Francisco to help them tackle some of their hardest problems, like shifting from being a human services business to becoming a product or software business. So I was fortunate to look really deeply as well at different innovative models in housing in the US, whether that was rent to own or equity release models, all focused, I guess, on solving different pain points or inefficiencies in the housing market. And so for me, that was a real light bulb moment on what are some of the innovations that make sense to apply to different markets, and why do some models uniquely make sense in some markets, but which ones are more broadly applicable. And I guess that said, like back to your earlier question on what was it like, management consulting broadly, to use a fitness analogy, can at times feel like bodybuilding, in the sense that it's very divorced from, say, any functional fitness. And so I now find myself really enjoying, I guess, what would be a more functional form of fitness in actually applying the lessons that I was lucky enough to learn over the course of that career to something very specific and mission-driven, and hopefully, you know, what will be a really transformative business for Australians and aspiring homeowners more broadly.
It's fascinating, and the exposure that you had, James, to, I guess, the US and the effort that's going into trying to solve that problem of housing affordability, how much attention is it getting in the US compared to what it is in Australia?
I'd say it seems like in Australia, housing affordability and housing access is actually the number one political issue. And so I'd say it's front and center in a more visceral way in Australia than it is in the US. And so the relative innovation that exists in the US, I wouldn't say is a consequence of a greater sort of like zeitgeist focus on housing access and affordability. But I think there's a long way to go in the maturity of the Australian market in coming up with and building new solutions that are focused on what are very clearly observable inefficiencies or inequalities that exist in the housing market today.
Tired of feeling stressed and uncertain when it comes to making big decisions about property? Navigating real estate can be overwhelming, often leading to costly mistakes and missed opportunities. What if we told you there's a better way? Introducing our exclusive one-on-one property strategy sessions. Say goodbye to uncertainty and hello to success. Access the expertise, guidance, and direction you need to make informed decisions that can lead to profitable outcomes. Take full control of your property journey today. Visit mymoneysorted.com.au or message us directly to book your one-on-one property strategy session with our experienced team. Don't miss out on this opportunity to thrive in the real estate market and secure your financial future.
Before we jumped on, James, you shared an incredible statistic that I think gives some perspective to the scale of the challenge that we've got here compared to the US. And obviously, as we touched on, part of that is driven by our slow response to housing supply and a demand that is scaling off the back of some incredible rates of immigration. Would you mind sharing what that data looks like here in Australia compared to the US?
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of comparisons to the US, there's a few helpful ones. I mean, the US is a radically different market to Australia on a few different dimensions. You know, here in Australia, we have three cities that comprise close to 50% of the Australian population. On the mortgage market side of things, the US has, broadly speaking, most people have 30-year fixed mortgages as effectively their standard product, and that generates a whole bunch of benefits for consumers. It does create a whole bunch of different unique challenges. But a third vector would be population growth. And in Australia, over the course of 2023, the latest estimate is that Australia will grow by 2.5%. That might sound like a really small number, 2.5%, but it's the highest rate of growth since 1952, so that post-war boom. And that's coming off, obviously, a much higher absolute base in Australia right now, with a population, you know, of 25 million people. So the rate of population growth in Australia in 2023 will actually be 80% higher than the US, which is less than 0.5% as their rate of population growth. And the US, of course, is absorbing that population growth across 50 different states, whereas Australia is absorbing that population growth in quite a concentrated, you know, set of cities. And so going back to, you know, in a way, your earlier question about sort of the focus of government and the role that they can play, which was not directly your question, but in some ways, to what extent is it front and center here in Australia? It's, I think there's a lot that governments can and should do for housing in Australia. And it does seem like they're throwing the kitchen sink at the challenge, but a lot of it is very focused on demand side solutions. And of course, own home is a demand side solution. We're not building new homes. We're focused on helping people get into existing homes. Those can be new build homes, but we're not physically building new homes. But I think the most important role that the government can play is really on the supply side of the challenge. But it's unfortunately one that rarely pays dividends within the political cycle. And so I think that side of the equation, that supply side, often gets neglected. And it's a particularly hard part of the housing supply challenge. But it's one that I think deserves the greatest level of effort. It's also challenging because there's three different tiers of government in Australia. We've got, you know, federal, state, and local, and all have varying levels of power when it comes to actually moving the needle, practically speaking, on housing supply. But, you know, going back to that statistic of, you know, 2.5% population growth, it's very clear that those people are going to need more homes to live in. Otherwise, it is going to radically alter housing accessibility for families around the country.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, James. And I think people are often speculating about what the next decade may look like in terms of housing price growth, and can it possibly, you know, double again? And when you look at figures like that and the imbalance between supply and demand, it's little wonder that we've had the growth that we've had, particularly over the last three decades. I think the, as you say, the supply side solution is far too short-sighted and needs really to be something that's, you know, a decade-long plan that's almost mandated and can't be shifted, because I couldn't agree more. You see such a divide between the objectives of local, state and federal governments. It's not a problem that's going away anytime soon. And obviously a big reason for, I guess, the mission you're on, which is to help others overcome this challenge of home ownership and housing affordability. How much would you say of that mission is a result of the challenges yourself and your co-founder Tim have faced personally?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'd say a lot of it has to do with the challenges that Tim and I have faced personally, as idyllic an upbringing as I had. Certainly no access to the bank of mum and dad to bridge that deposit gap. And Tim, my co-founder, is an own home customer. So his pathway to home ownership had own home front and center. And so we really did work backwards from sort of the challenge that we had lived and breathed ourselves, and thinking through what is the form of solution that we wish existed that would solve the challenge that we faced specifically. And that was that we were more than capable of servicing or affording a mortgage. We just didn't have the couple of hundred grand that you typically need for a 20% deposit and stamp duty to access the security of home ownership in a major capital city. And so really out of that, we also didn't need to look too far to see that that wasn't a problem that was particularly unique to Tim and I. That was also the challenge that our siblings were facing. It was also the challenge that many of our close friends were facing, and much of our generation is facing, where there's this sense that there's a risk that housing in Australia becomes hereditary. And but there's, I'd say, a growing energy to focus on this challenge. And Tim and I are really excited to be deeply involved in this space of tackling that issue and challenge of what I'd describe as housing access rather than necessarily affordability per se.
Yeah, it's a incredible mission that you're on, and it's a pretty insane sort of 3 years that you've had. Did you ever have imagined you'd find yourself in the position that you are today?
So, I'd say the short answer is humbly yes. We've had a vision, and always had a huge amount of belief and confidence in what we're doing. I've got an incredible co-founder. I've got an amazing team. And so while in some ways it's insane to reflect on what we've accomplished over the last 3 years, it also feels like a very natural consequence of having wonderfully smart, hardworking people tackling a problem that is lying in plain sight, and a problem that they are deeply passionate about. And so in terms of like, what is the position that we're in today? We are incredibly fortunate to have the backing of Australia's largest bank, the Commonwealth Bank, and other amazing investors like Square Peg Capital. We're supporting families in virtually every state around the country. And we've already delivered some really wonderful outcomes for families that we've supported, some of whom have now what we describe as sort of graduated from own home, in the sense that we played a role in helping them bridge that deposit gap. And now they've refinanced away from own home and have a standard, you know, 80% mortgage without the support of own home. And so those are some of the wonderful stories that we as a team are really delighted to already, you know, 3 early years into our mission, already have as wonderful sort of anecdotes and reference points. And it's been incredibly energizing.
And look, 3 years may seem like a long time, but given the scale of the challenge that you're looking to tackle, and probably the other part that I would observe, James, is the very foreign nature of the concept. You know, the solution that you guys are offering hasn't really been done well in Australia before. No doubt your exposure to those markets in the States and those solutions in the States. So often the states are a bit of a bellwether for what we're going to see here in emerging trends. How far do you see this going for you guys? What sort of scale of uptake do you think you can achieve with the solution?
Well, our vision is that 10 years from now, Own Home will have supported more aspiring homeowners achieve their dreams of home ownership than any other business. Today, that's a mantle that's held by the Commonwealth Bank of Australia as the largest supporter of first home buyers. Probably in second place would be the providers of lenders mortgage insurance, who is, you know, today that's probably the primary financial solution that helps people in bridging that deposit gap. And so we know that that's a solution that is incredibly ripe for disruption. It's a very quirky and weird product in the sense that it's an insurance product, but and the consumer pays for it, but they can't even read the policy because they're not the insured party. The bank is the insured party. And it's a model that hasn't really faced any innovation in the last 50 years since it was originally actually started as a government program before it was sold to GE back in the day. And so that is a sort of solution that we're incredibly excited to be focused on sort of disrupting, for want of a better term. When we look to the US and how much of a bellwether is that for the innovation that's possible here, I think we've in some ways Own Home is a globally unique solution. There's nothing like Own Home in the US, and I think that's a natural consequence in some ways of the quirks of the Australian market, but also a consequence in some ways of the luxury of what in Australia is an incredibly resilient property market that will, you know, in time continue to attract sort of global institutional capital outside and above and beyond sort of the big four banks, who are logically incentivized to play in the world of sort of 80% mortgages. But we know that there's sort of a raft of capital that's looking to support and provide innovative solutions that are focused on the clear inefficiencies that exist in the market, whether that's the clear gap between you know, the value for money of lenders' mortgage insurance versus the level of sort of pent-up demand that exists there for a deposit gap solution.
We hope this latest property chat has inspired you and helped you to knock out any limiting beliefs that might be holding you back. If you're feeling motivated to get into the property market but are wanting a coach to guide you on the journey, check out our property strategy sessions by the link in the show notes. We look forward to meeting with you.